It is Wednesday, October 4th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, President Donald Trump travels to Las Vegas as the investigation into the deadly mass shooting continues. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson says he never considered leaving his job.
The vice president has never had to persuade me to remain as Secretary of State because I have never considered leaving this post.
And we look at an experiment in community in an American desert. It's all ahead. U.S. President Donald Trump has arrived in Las Vegas following the deadly mass shooting at the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino. Police say 64-year-old Stephen Paddock has been identified as the shooter. At least 59 people died in the attack. I'm joined now by White House correspondent Steve Herman, who has also lived and worked in Las Vegas for many years. Steve, what's on the president's schedule today as he visits this city, which is, of course, in mourning?
Well, first, Sarah, at a hospital in Las Vegas, he is going to visit with some of the victims of this shooting. That is closed to the media. And then the president is to meet with what the White House is calling some of the civilian heroes, as well as first responders to this event on the Las Vegas Strip. We're also expecting that he will make some comments on the ground in Las Vegas to reporters traveling with him.
I know you covered the fire at the MGM Grand Hotel and Casino back in 1980. What kind of lessons did the city learn from that tragedy in regard to safety improvements?
Well, that led to a lot of changes as far as fire codes and sprinkler regulations and cooperation between agencies. That was the fire in 1980. 85 people died. And one thing I can say about Las Vegas, and this has been emphasized by the various public safety agencies in the city, is that they do work remarkably well together. There is fantastic cooperation, not only when we have mass casualty events, but also on a day-to-day basis between the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department and the Clark County Fire Department. And in this particular case, there's been cooperation from the very beginning with the Federal Bureau of Investigation as well. And I should mention that these larger hotels have a very sophisticated and highly skilled security teams and equipment. They're able to monitor what's going on every floor of the hotels. They work closely in cooperation with the police and federal authorities because Las Vegas is a magnet for all kinds of people, both good and bad.
Yeah, well, and Las Vegas is often the setting for concerts and other large public gatherings, conventions, all kinds of things. I mean, I would think moving forward, city officials must have to be perhaps even more careful about how safety procedures can be improved.
Well, I think that has been really in place since 9/11. We know that some of the attackers, the hijackers of from Al Qaeda, on those flights had been in Las Vegas for whatever reason at one point. And so there has been a conscientiousness and awareness, as there's been in most major cities of the United States since the 9/11 terrorist attacks, that there really needs to be a lot of situational awareness. And look, I think a lot of people would say that whether it's New York City, Las Vegas, London, Paris, you know, any major city in the world, there are always going to be people who are going to try to plot something. Now, what obviously is one thing they're still looking at is the motivation behind this particular attack. There's no evidence at this point that this was for any reason connected to any sort of extremism. And I think that's an additional lesson, Sarah, that it doesn't have to be a terrorist attack. It can be just one person with a small armada of weaponry that can really cause a sort of mass destruction.
Absolutely. And that's one of the things that makes this whole investigation going forward, you know, so difficult in planning for trying to withstand an attack like this.
Well, one thing I would note, I was based in Asia for a couple of decades, about 25 years, actually. And in a number of the countries that I lived in and that I would visit, when you went into a high-rise hotel or any sort of five-star establishment, even shopping malls, you had to go through metal detectors, and any baggage going into the hotels had to be screened. And so you would think, obviously, any sort of building which overlooks any sort of public event or some sort of government building or anything else like that, that you would want to be very prudent about making sure that somebody cannot bring weapons into your establishment. Now, are Americans willing to put up with that sort of security? Well, if you had asked people in the 1990s whether they would go through the sort of checks we see at airports now, everybody would have said, you've got to be crazy. I'm not going to stand for that. But that has become a norm in the United States and elsewhere in the world. And it's possible that in Western countries, we may start to see this sort of security also extended to hotels and other sorts of public places.
All right. Thanks very much. That's White House correspondent Steve Herman. Time now for social media. Well, Time Magazine is reporting that Google will release a smaller version of its Home Smart speaker. And this was something that the company revealed during an event on Wednesday. The device is called the Google Home Mini, and it will cost $49 and launches on October 19th. It features four LED lights that alert the user when it's listening. Well, like the larger Google Home, the Mini is partially made of fabric and will be available in many types of colors. There are four LED lights underneath the fabric that illuminate when the device is listening. Google says the Home Mini will be capable of connecting to any Chromecast compatible speaker and can project audio in 360 degrees. Well, on a lighter note, today is hashtag National Taco Day. Kelsey Houghton tweets, Happy National Taco Day, a salute to one of my absolute favorite foods in existence. Jill Real tweets, Wait, is it National Taco Day and National Vodka Day? Why am I even at work? Lisa Hernandez tweets, It's not Tuesday, but any day is good for tacos. And that's a look at social media. Here are some of the top news stories that are trending. U.S. intelligence officials call North Korea's leader very rational. The White House budget director says the federal government will not pay off Puerto Rico's debt. A report says sarin gas was used in Syria prior to an attack in Khan Sheikhoun, and Islamic State militants claim responsibility for an attack in Somalia. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
Scientists addressing a press conference in early 2016 rocked the science community when they announced the first detection of gravitational waves. Described as ripples in the fabric of space-time, the existence of gravitational waves was predicted by Albert Einstein in his general theory of relativity. And now three of the key scientists behind the detections have been awarded the 2017 Nobel Prize in Physics. One half of the prize was given to MIT's Rainer Weiss of the LIGO-Virgo collaboration. Weiss also had an important role in the development of the technology used to detect the gravitational waves. Sharing the other half of the award are Barry Barish and Kip Thorne, both from the California Institute of Technology and the LIGO-Virgo collaboration. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, we look at political tensions in Spain. U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson is pushing back at reports he's on the verge of stepping down.
Let me tell you what I've learned about this president, whom I did not know before taking this office. He loves his country. He puts Americans and America first. He's smart. He demands results wherever he goes, and he holds those around him accountable for whether they've done the job he's asked them to do.
Tillerson made the statement Wednesday to State Department reporters, the same day NBC News reported the secretary was on the verge of resigning earlier this year after months of tensions and reported frustration with President Trump. I spoke with VOA State Department correspondent Cindy Sain and asked her whether this is an extraordinary statement for a secretary of state to make.
Yes, indeed it was, Sarah, and especially this secretary, who is not given to impromptu encounters with the press, not at all. And so a lot of people in Washington were sort of holding their breath because there was a bombshell NBC news story that broke earlier describing tensions between President Trump and Secretary of State Tillerson and alleging that Secretary Tillerson had been on the verge of resigning in July and that Vice President Mike Pence had been called in to talk to him and to urge him to not resign, Vice President Pence to urge Tillerson to stay on in his post and to calm him down and sort of walk him back off the ledge.
But there have been a number of reports, I think, going back a few months, saying that things were a little rocky between the secretary and President Trump, as well as other members of the Trump administration.
Yes, that's right. And a lot of foreign policy experts say that Secretary Tillerson, as the U.S. chief diplomat, has one of the toughest jobs in town, with President Trump taking to Twitter, as he did on Sunday, basically tweeting, our wonderful Secretary of State should not be wasting his time reaching out to the North Korean leader, Kim Jong-un, we'll take care of it. After Secretary of State Tillerson has said again and again that diplomacy is the first and best option with North Korea. So this is just one example of a very public clash, and many took those tweets from the president to be publicly undercutting his own Secretary of State.
Well, do you think with the statement today, though, that Mr. Tillerson has stopped these rumors, or they will be maybe continuing?
Well, the very fact, Sarah, that so many of us were watching to see if he's going to resign, I think does not bode well. I mean, I think it was an attempt to clean up, and it was addressed most of all to President Trump, but he reiterated his loyalty and praised some of the president's, what he called the president's and the administration's foreign policy achievements. But I think that there are still questions, and the fact that he felt the need to react to a news story like that shows that the ground may be a bit shaky.
VOA State Department correspondent Cindy Sain. Catalan leader Carles Puigdemont is scheduled to make a statement later Wednesday. Speaking with the BBC, he said he expects independence from Spain will follow completion of the vote tally from Sunday's referendum. His comments follow a rare televised address Tuesday by Spanish King Felipe.
Todos hemos sido testigos de los hechos que se han ido produciendo en Cataluña.
Felipe called the referendum illegal and criticized Catalan leaders for repeatedly, consciously, and deliberately breaching the Constitution and the autonomy statute that recognizes and protects its historic institutions and self-government. He appealed for Spanish unity. More than 40% of voters in the Northwest region cast ballots despite a police crackdown that injured hundreds. Monash University Spanish professor Carles Uxo in Australia tells International Edition's Victor Beatty there were things in the king's speech that he did not say.
He did not call to have more conversations between the two parties. He did not mention that the majority of Catalans want a referendum. And in my view, he really did not add anything new. So one wonders why he did that. My view is that he was preparing the rest of us for what will be the next step in this, and the most probably the Spanish government will apply the Article 155 of the Constitution, which nobody wanted to see, but will happen. And that article, once it's applied, it basically means that the Catalan government ceases to exist and the central government takes the power, all the Catalan government, basically.
What do you think the reaction in Catalonia will be to that if it happens?
Well, imagine what happened on Sunday and multiply that by 20, and that is exactly what will happen. Maybe we need to remember that a Catalan government, during this 40 years of Spanish dictatorship, there was no Catalan government. As soon as we came back to democracy, the Catalan government existed again. Obviously, if now the Spanish government decides to make it disappear, and people think definitely this is a dictatorship, it's not democracy, and we don't want to be part of it.
Late Tuesday, Catalonia's leader told the BBC the region will declare independence in a matter of days. If it does, what will be the next step?
Probably it's important to remember that the 12th of October is the Spanish National Day. So most probably they will time everything to either coincide or happen just 2 or 3 days before that. So we should most probably over the weekend it will happen. Once the Catalan government does that, the Catalan president can be and will surely be arrested. It's a crime of secession. And the Catalan government will disappear. Article 155 will come into effect. And what happens after that? Most definitely there will be a lot more violence than what we have seen so far.
Carles Uxa said he believes a peaceful resolution is possible, a new prime minister who agrees to a legal referendum in Catalonia. He said it's unclear a majority of Catalans want to leave Spain. This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our 5-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter, every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
This is International Edition. Every year, and only for a week, a city grows from the sand of the Nevada desert. Black Rock City has three principles: radical self-reliance, self-expression, and gifting. The gathering is called Burning Man, and it's been around for 30 years. Its creators wanted to build a community that rejects the basic laws of a modern capitalist society. VOA's Jenia Dulo reports.
A remote desert in the state of Nevada, a three-hour drive to the closest big city, no cell phone service. The temperature during the day is 40 degrees Celsius. At night, it can plummet to below zero, and at times, sandstorms can whirl to life. Despite these extreme conditions, 70,000 people make the trek to this spot for a week every year. Jet is 11, but he says this is his 12th Burning Man. The first time he was here was in his mother's womb. He likes to ride in a giant shark vehicle that his father built many years ago. As a part of the gathering, they offer free snow cones. Jet knows the first principle of Black Rock City is radical self-reliance. This is his list of necessary things.
Ice, water, goggles, mask, like a sunscreen, and chapstick.
Michael, a veteran burner, as frequent participants are called, comes here with his daughter. Together, they made Berserker, a mechanical dragon that is powered by pedals and breathes propane fire.
I think Burning Man is all about creative freedom. It's all about trying to push the limits, trying to be outrageous, so people go, wow, who would ever think of that?
Artistic freedom in Black Rock City is a law. Radical self-expression is one of the main principles of the Burning Man. Some people go out naked, some create an interesting costume, and some ride a fire-breathing dragon. Money is not exchanged at Burning Man. Instead, burners adhere to the principle of unconventional gifting. No matter what, burner will be fed and offered water or drink for free. You can even mail a letter to any place in the world or have your bike fixed, all at no cost.
Let's say someone comes to me and I fix their bike. I just trust them to go and do a massage for someone else, and that someone else is going to cook a hot dog that I'm going to eat while walking an esplanade. And there is no need to keep any kind of records about who did what, who did how much. We just trust each other to do the right thing that's needed in the right amount.
Burning Man is a dream of a better world, a social experiment where people get together, shed their normal way of life, and trust one another. It is an alternative to what they call the default world, the capitalist society they live in. And for them, this utopia appears to work for everyone during this 1 week of isolation in the desert. Jenya Dulo, VOA News, Black Rock City, Nevada.
Sounds like quite a spectacle. Well, that's our show. Please remember to visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
President Donald Trump addressed a group of African leaders during his trip to New York. He told them, "We hope to extend our economic partnerships with countries that are committed to self-reliance and to fostering opportunities for job creation in both Africa and the United States. Africa has tremendous business potential and represents a vast array of markets. Indeed, 10 of the world's fastest-growing economies are in Africa." President Trump noted that increasing American trade and investment across diverse industries, including agriculture, energy, transportation, health care, travel, and tourism, will further transform lives throughout the continent. The U.S. Millennium Challenge Corporation, administered by the State Department, is already considering an investment worth hundreds of millions of dollars in Côte d'Ivoire, which has made impressive economic reforms. We also hope that African firms, like the company Sasol, will consider making investments in the United States, said President Trump. Sasol is building a $9 billion petrochemical plant in Louisiana, which will create many new jobs in the state. The U.S. will continue its partnership with African nations on critical health initiatives as well. With regard to addressing conflict in Africa, the United States is committed to partnering with countries and organizations like the African Union to end violence, counter terrorism, and respond to humanitarian crises. Terrorist groups such as ISIS, Al-Shabaab, Boko Haram, and Al-Qaeda continue to threaten too many African countries. The United States is proud to work with these nations to eradicate terrorist safe havens, to cut off their finances, and to discredit their depraved ideology, said President Trump. The U.S. is monitoring the ongoing violence in South Sudan and the DRC, where millions of lives are at risk. Real results in halting this catastrophe, said President Trump, will require an African-led peace process. Toward that end, U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations Nikki Haley will be traveling to the continent to discuss avenues of conflict resolution and prevention. The United States, said President Trump, believes that free, independent, democratic nations are the best vehicle for human happiness and success, including in Africa.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.